Up next, we turn to Denise Morris and Jan Hocken, our movie moles, who are going to be talking about the new movie period piece called Detroit.
Thank you, Joe. This is Denise Morris and Jan Hocken. We both did see Detroit, and to say that the film is swirling with controversy would be an understatement, and we're going to try to unpack some of that and give our own reactions and thoughts about this film. The film is directed by Kathryn Bigelow. You may know her from such films as Hurt Locker and Zero Dark Thirty. And it was also written by Mark Boal. They've been a team for quite a while. Detroit is a fictionalized account of the violent interrogation of a group of residents and visitors who are staying in the Algiers Motel in Detroit in the context of the July 1967 Detroit uprisings. The film stars John Boyega as Melvin Demukes, who is the pragmatist, and he works two jobs. We also have Algie Smith as the lead singer of the R&B group The Dramatics, and he is our dreamer in the film. And we have also Will Poulter as the sadistic cop. We seem to have kind of iconic character elements here. The film opens with the raid of an unlicensed club during a celebration for the veterans returning from Vietnam. The raid is not the first by a long shot, and it becomes the spark, quote-unquote, that ignites and propels people into the city streets to say, basically, we've had enough, and there's all violence, there's rioting, there's... Well, that's what we see in the film, and we're here to talk about the larger context, a little bit about what we don't see in the film, but some important notes about what it means to try to portray something as volatile and as controversial as what we call a riot in America. But Jan, you're more familiar with Bigelow's work, and you have a very concise way of understanding what she does. So let's start with that. Because there is a lot of questioning and controversy around her right as a white filmmaker to even make this film.
She's known for her biggest commercial successes were The Hurt Locker and Zero Dark Thirty. Both of the films are about men in situations where they're authorized by the state to exercise lethal violence, and they become increasingly sadistic and unhinged by this authorized violence on the kind of front lines of the state. And her earlier films have been seen as moving too close to the intimacy of these encounters and the madness and sadism of them. Zero Dark Thirty was criticized, including by us here on the Old Mole, for basically it seemed ultimately like she was an apologist for torture and the CIA's use of torture. That was a very big problem with that film. But she's really good at getting close to just the palpable, sweaty anxiety of people in situations where they're trying to subdue a force, and they're authorized by the state to do this and become increasingly caught in the sadism of it. Now, in this context, she works with what she does well. In some ways, you could see this focus on the Algiers moving from the broad the migration north, this little animated sequence at the very beginning, to the rebellion on the streets, to this claustrophobic scene of the Algiers Motel and the sadism that unfolds in these small rooms. It's kind of her ideal stage. But then the question is that the best way of framing this situation? Does she move too close in and stay too close to the police? Is there too much left on outside of that frame? And I think both the strength of the film also is part of what makes it so controversial and evokes so much. It's very disturbing to watch, and people have understandably different reactions. Does she have the right to do this kind of film, to have that kind of violence against the bodies of black people, black men? You know, when you do a film that's so close to history and intercut, there are devices that make it in the tradition of docudrama, intercut with news footage so you feel like it's the real thing. And the responsibilities on a filmmaker go up quite a bit when you use those devices. And when you're talking about things that really happen to people and evoke understandably intense reactions.
And, you know, you argue, of course, that in the end, there is a moral condemnation of this behavior, not so much on a systemic level, maybe perhaps not at all on a systemic level, more like in that intimacy, in that individualized sense. And, you know, there...
sympathies are partly with the front line of the state that's expected to both, you know, this cop, the sadistic cop, is clearly given mixed messages. You're not supposed to shoot looters in the back. He kills someone who's looting a store, and then he's sent right out the next day.
Right, and he's facing criminal charges, but he goes back on the street.
Right, so it's clear that there's official line, you're not supposed to shoot people for stealing groceries, but on the other hand, they are supposed to quell a rebellion.
Right.
And so your sympathies are with these frontline police, but then it turns, and I think had to, or it would be an unforgivable film.
Right, yeah. And many people think it's unforgivable as it is. So, but there is this question about, you know, is this spectacle, is there something being captured here that has something to say, or is there nothing to say? And for me, one of the things that I think about often in these situations is, how does it work to appeal to this gut reaction, this emotional reaction to this kind of violence and visual horror? For me, I'm not so certain, based on all sorts of other understandings about how this works, that appealing on that level actually changes hearts and minds. And that's perhaps what the intent is in many of her films, but somehow she always seems to walk too fine a line, or, you know?
Yeah, and I'm always interested as a psychoanalytic film person, you know, what are the containing devices of the film? How does the film allow you to watch something that is pretty horrifying and anxiety provoking? And then how does it help you with whatever anxieties are stirred up? And at the end, we have we have Motown music kind of intercut, which is also has a kind of distance, and it's reassuring, very sensual. It's not like hip hop. It doesn't have that cutting edge of rage. It's a very reassuring sound. And so she uses that and the aspirations of these singers. It's both that part of the history of Motown, which is important, but it also gives you distance from just the palpable violence and rage. And then at the end, you have one of the performers retreating to the church and retreating to singing gospel songs. And that, well, it's true. I mean, on the one hand, the church is a place of sanctuary, political sanctuary in black communities, but it also kind of contains the problem for the audience at the end, because it's, in that sense, I'm kind of suspicious of how that scene is used.
I agree, and I think part of the problem in having less context and less broad analysis or a more broad look at what was happening in the streets, we are left to think that we can contain this, what seems uncivilized behavior, in the framework of what a riot is understood to be versus what a rebellion might involve, which is community organizing, movement building, demands. And in fact, one reviewer pointed out that the only reason why there was a trial had to do with community organizing that had happened, and it did involve the church. It was the gathering place for people to come together and say, we as a community demand that you investigate and bring to trial these officers for their behavior. That's not in the films. So what it is that's being contained, it's not fleshed out, because we don't see.
It retreats from the politics of the church.
Right. It retreats from the politics of the church versus perhaps the politics of black liberation movements that were in full force at this point and growing. And
And also Detroit was one of dozens of urban uprisings during that same summer. In the summer of 67, Detroit, Birmingham, Milwaukee, Buffalo, Cincinnati, and Newark were also cities with massive urban rebellions. There was the Watts Uprising in 1965. It's still a question that's debated whether not only what to call it, but what to call it, whether it's a riot or an uprising, revolt, rebellion. Those terms also suggest something about its rationality as a political strategy, and that question still hasn't been settled. Most of the people who were killed were black men, black people, primarily black men, by the police.
And thousands arrested.
Yeah, there were 43 people killed during those days. 33 of them were black people. So it's easy to focus on someone breaking into a store and stealing a TV rather than the number of people killed by the police. So there's always that, you know, that collapsing of violence against property versus violence against people.
Right. And for two interesting thoughts about riot, we have Martin Luther King, who framed rioting as the language of the unheard, and others as the language of the youth. But also Bob Marley, who in his song Burning and Illuding, one of the lyrics is burning an illusion tonight. And I also think one last point is that, you know, in this good cop, bad cop thing that she does in the film, for me, begs the question of whether or not we want to understand as the system as being broken or functioning exactly as it's intended, which is as a racist institution. And that is what policing is. So it's not a question of good cops, bad cops, which we see a lot played out in the film.
Yeah, although I think it's clear, too, that other the National Guard, the police, politicians are implicated. But
right, exactly.
Yeah, we focus in on the one sadistic cop.
Yeah. But. Well, this is Denise Morris and Jan Hocken. We're talking about the film Detroit, directed by Catherine Bigelow, and its many controversies.
But it's a reason to read more about that history, and there are a couple museums that opened this weekend, museum exhibits on the Detroit Uprising.
Absolutely. Thank you.